The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payden for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Religion News Service, Fave News, and the Associated Press. Our first article was published by Religion News Service on September 27, written by Adele M. Banks, and entitled, AME Bishop Sylvester Beeman Named Chair of White House Council on African Engagement. An African-American Methodist Episcopal bishop has been appointed chair of the new White House Council that aims to increase dialogue between U.S. officials and African, Caribbean, and African-American communities. Bishop Sylvester Scott Beeman of Delaware was named the leader of the President's Advisory Council on African Diaspora Engagement in the United States. The White House announced on Tuesday, September 26. Beeman, 63, is the prelate of the AME district that includes South Africa, Namibia, and Angola. 11 other inaugural council members in fields including business, social work, and government were named as well. The African diaspora in the United States, a rich and diverse community of African Americans and African immigrants, is foundational to our 21st century partnership with Africa, the White House said. This community, which includes descendants of enslaved Black Americans, has long advocated for the prosperity of the African continent and its people, and strengthened the unique relationship between the United States and Africa. Other members of the Council for the 2023 and 2025 term include actress Viola Davis, Spelman College President Helen D. Gale, and WNBA player Chaney Aguamika. They will provide invaluable guidance to reinforce cultural, social, political, and economic ties between the U.S. and Africa, and promote trade, investment, and educational exchanges between the U.S. and Africa, the White House said of the 12-member council. Bishop Beeman's extensive experience and deep roots in Africa will enable him to lead the council to achieve its full potential. Beeman and President Joe Biden have a decades-long friendship. The clergyman delivered the benediction at Biden's inauguration. Before Beeman was elected a bishop in 2021, he was the pastor of a church in Wilmington, Delaware, a city that has long been the president's home base. I am looking forward to serving this council with diplomacy, integrity, and respect, Beeman said in a statement on his Facebook page. I seek to honor all those who are part of the African diaspora and keep the rich heritage and history of the entire continent alive and relevant. In December 2022, Biden signed an executive order establishing the council, and Vice President Kamala Harris announced the administration's commitment to it during the 2022 U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. In addition to being a confidant of Biden's, Beeman collaborated with Beau Biden, the president's son, when the younger Biden was Delaware's attorney general in the mid to late 2000s. The then pastor also took part in the services for Beau Biden, processing in with the clergy at their funeral mass after his death in 2015, said John Thomas III, editor of the Christian Recorder, the AME Church's official newspaper. When Joe Biden was a presidential candidate in 2020, Beeman welcomed him to Bethel AME Church in Wilmington in the wake of demonstrations that occurred after the death of George Floyd, a Black man who died under the knee of a white Minneapolis police officer. Biden decried racism at a meeting with Black leaders in the church. Footage of that meeting, including Biden kneeling in the Black church's sanctuary in front of Beeman and other leaders, was later used in an ad by Donald Trump's campaign that included a slide that read, "Stop Joe Biden and his rioters." Beeman told RNS at the time that the ad was overtly racist and offensive. He and several AME church denominational leaders signed a letter demanding the Trump campaign remove the ad and apologize for it. Our next article, published by RNS on October 2, was written by Catherine Post and entitled, "An Arizona School Board Member Was Told to Stop Quoting the Bible. Now She's Suing." An Arizona school board member who was instructed to stop quoting Bible passages during board meetings filed a federal lawsuit against her district on Wednesday, September 27, alleging her First Amendment rights to free speech and free exercise of religion had been violated. Heather Rooks, a Christian who attends a large non-denominational church, has been serving the Peoria United School District, one of Arizona's largest, since January 2023. She is being represented by the law firm Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher, LLP, and the First Liberty Institute, a Texas-based conservative legal organization known for defending school football coach Joe Kennedy, who recently won a Supreme Court case after being fired for praying at the 50-yard line. Since the start of her term, Rooks, whose four children attend school in the district, has quoted short Bible passages during the board comments portion of each board meeting. The passages were often related to the theme of courage. "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go," Rooks said at a meeting in January, quoting from the first chapter of Joshua in the Hebrew Bible. "Keep me safe, my God, for in you I take refuge," she said in April, quoting from Psalm 16. Rooks told RNS she was surprised and then saddened after being instructed not to quote scripture because she never thought that would happen in America. She said she recited Bible passages as a source of strength when faced with difficult decisions. "With everything that goes on as a new school board member, we're facing a lot of adversity and challenges. So reading those verses really gave me some strength and courage and peace," Rooks said. In particular, she was seeking courage to keep speaking out for parents. Critics of Rooks say her quoting of Bible passages has political undertones, especially during board meetings when issues like white supremacy and gender nonconformity are discussed. In April, the board voted down a bathroom policy supported by Rooks that would have restricted transgender students from using bathrooms that align with their gender identity. In February, the group Secular Communities for Arizona issued a complaint to the board arguing that Rooks was violating the Constitution's Establishment Clause. "It is coercive, embarrassing, and intimidating for citizens from a different religion or non-religious citizens to display deference toward a religious sentiment in which they do not believe, but which the school board member does," wrote Diane Post, legal director of Secular Communities for Arizona. In May, and again in June, a staff attorney for the nonprofit group Freedom from Religion Foundation sent emails to the board president requesting that the district stop board members from promoting their beliefs. The emails said that failure to do so would subject the school district to unnecessary liability and potential financial strain. The board's legal counsel emailed board members in mid-July saying it would be in the best interest of the district for board members to stop quoting Bible verses because doing so violated federal and state laws, and because Freedom from Religion and Secular Arizona had threatened to take further action, including filing a lawsuit. Shortly after, Rooks announced at a board meeting that she would refrain from reciting Bible passages. She added that she would have my attorneys at First Liberty Institute handle this matter. The lawsuit claims that quoting brief Bible passages without comment does not violate the First Amendment's prohibition against establishment of religion, but is instead part of the long-standing tradition of government officials solemnizing public occasions in this way. In conversation with RNS, Hiram Sasser, Executive General Counsel for First Liberty Institute, clarified that the tradition of calling upon a resource to solemnize an occasion applies to people of all religious backgrounds, not just Christians quoting the Bible. Rook's lawsuit also says the district's policy and actions chill her ability to freely speak and substantially burden her religious exercise by forcing her to choose between following the precepts of her religion and retaining her position as a member of the board. Thus, it argues, the district has violated state and federal laws guaranteeing Rook's right to freedom of speech and free exercise of religion. In a call with RNS, Freedom From Religious Foundation co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor questioned the efficacy of the suit, saying that because the district didn't discipline Rook's, there's no actual case or controversy for a lawsuit. She's suing her own school district because she disagrees with a legal opinion about the legal liability that the board is entailing if her conduct continues, said Gaylor. Heather Rooks is basically abusing judicial resources in order to fight a culture war. Sasser told RNS that in joining the case, First Liberty Institute is fighting to preserve the correct and original meaning of the Constitution. He added that he thinks school districts are still adjusting to the Supreme Court's Kennedy versus Bremerton school district decision, which found the Constitution protects a football coach's right to pray in front of students. You have 50 years of legal precedent that essentially tilts the scales in favor of censorship of anything religious in public, said Sasser. That is suddenly gone, and the new standard is to accommodate religious speech. In her July email to the school board, the board's legal counsel argued that Kennedy versus Bremerton did not apply because the coach's prayer was silent and not broadcast publicly. She did not return requests for comment. As of October the 2nd, Peoria United School District had not yet been served, but Sasser said the process was underway. Heather decided to let the legal process play out, said Sasser. That's why we filed the lawsuit, to see if they're right or we're right. Now an article from Fave News, published on September 27, written by Casey Benefield and entitled, Spokane City Council Denounces Mayor for Appearance with Christian Nationalist. Spokane, Washington. The Spokane City Council voted 4-3 on Monday night, September 25, to denounce Mayor Nadine Woodward for her appearance on stage with Matt Shea and Sean Foicht at the controversial Let Us Worship event she attended just over a month ago. As the last item on the agenda, the resolution's open comment period came at the end of the nearly five-hour council meeting, with 33 people commenting and all the members of the council making a statement before the vote. Who are Shea and Foicht? While Foicht's self-identity as a Christian nationalist troubles Woodward's critics and other religious leaders, her appearance on stage praying with Shea was highlighted in more than half of the resolution's text. Shea is well known in the region as a former Washington state legislator connected to and for participation in domestic terrorism, advocating the creation of a new state called Liberty and his Biblical Basis for War manifesto. He is the pastor of On Fire Ministries and the host of Patriot Radio, a podcast for Christian patriots in the defense of liberty. Foicht, who may not be as well known locally, is known nationally for his worship tours, which began as protests to government mandates limiting Christian gatherings during the pandemic. In July, religious leaders throughout the Pacific Northwest wrote a letter to government leaders in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho, calling out Foyk's anti-LGBTQ plus bigotry in response to his 50-state Kingdom to the Capitol tour. This tour was held in tandem with his Let Us Worship tour, which came through Spokane. Public comment on the resolution. At the meeting, Council President Lori Kinner gave warnings throughout the open comment period to maintain order and decorum, but that did not stop some in attendance from disrupting the event with applause, audible prayers, and other comments, and even singing. Most of the public who commented were against the resolution to denounce the mayor, with several of them not actual residents of Spokane, but Spokane Valley. Just more than a handful of the speakers favored the resolution, though two of those represented larger groups. One representing 44 from faith leaders and leaders of conscience, and the other representing 357 signers of a petition sponsored by the Spectrum Center and the Peace and Justice Action League of Spokane. Those for and against the resolution use the same language of separation of church and state, religious freedom, and fighting against hate as reasons for their views. The public's arguments. Terry Hill, the first speaker, was one of the few who spoke in favor of denouncing Woodward. He ended his time with this warning to the council. Your vote tonight will be part of your legacy. Part of your legacy on your time on the council. Vote wisely, Hill said. Later in the meeting, Patriot Church pastor Jay McPherson said he felt he was being denounced along with the mayor because he also attended the worship event and had encouraged his congregation to do the same. He used his time to push back against the resolution's language in paragraph 12 that states, whereas on August 24, 2023, the Spokane City Council received a letter from a collective of Spokane faith leaders in which they called on the Spokane City Council to hold fast to the separation of church and state, reject attempts to cloak bigotry in religious language, and make clear that civic leaders give no support to the ideology of Christian nationalism or white supremacy. What is Christian nationalism? What do those who put on that worship service have to do with white supremacy? Nothing, McPherson said. Whoever wrote this resolution is simply lying. White supremacy? We hate white supremacy. If we thought any of the people putting that on were white supremacists, we would not be there. Council members comment on the resolution. After an hour and a half of public comment, the council members spoke. Nearly all of them referred to their own faith backgrounds. Council member Betsy Wilkerson said she was the daughter of two pastors and the grandmother of three, and gave her reasons for voting in favor. I just want to say we must experience some personal discomfort when dearly held beliefs are challenged, especially when these beliefs translate into actions that might harm our neighbors, she said. Referring to Shay, she also said, I cannot stand by as the mayor of our city stands with a man who used religion to cloak bigotry. She also said that Shay, using the language of fire for calling out the LGBTQ community, was irresponsible, as many in the community don't understand that fire means Holy Ghost fire, as one public commenter pointed out to defend the event's language. The challenge is not that everybody understands that and understands the Bible and religion like we do, so we have to be clear about that, Wilkerson said. This issue is not about condemning. It is about condemning hate and not about freedom. This includes condemning when leaders stand shoulder to shoulder with those that call for harm upon our neighbors. a singular view for and against the resolution. Ryan Ulrich, the newest member of the council, a member of the LGBTQ community, and a former pastor, said he memorized the whole books of Matthew, Acts, and Romans in the Bible growing up as a Bible quiz kid. While denouncing the hate and division caused by Shea and Foycht, he made a motion to defer the vote 1 week so he could read the legal analysis brought up by council members Michael Cathcart and Jonathan Bingle that he missed. That motion was voted against and led him to then vote no on the resolution. In full transparency, I was fully ready to vote to denounce, but as a steward of the citizens of Spokane's resources, I really thought it was important that we hear our legal counsel's opinions, especially since my colleagues brought that up, he said. I want to listen to those experts. So that's what it entirely came down to. The final vote. Cathcart, Bingle, and Ulrich voted to not pass the resolution, while council members Wilkerson, Zach Zappone, Karen Stratton, and Kinnear voted in favor. After the gavel hit the second block, the sound block to Kinnear's words, "Meeting is adjourned," many in the audience were notably upset. One man calling the city council sycophants and cowards. Not all were keen to name call, such as Lyle Duck, who also gave public comment in support of Woodward. Before the event, he said that if the mayor was denounced, it would set a precedent for people like him to be denounced. Once they officially give her that label, then it seems like they just tag on whatever they want afterward pretty carelessly, Doc said. Look at all the labels Shea carries with him, not really convicted of anything, ever. But yet, those labels seem to stick in every story like he did actually commit those crimes when it's a legend. Doc said those labels then get transferred to Woodward and by default to him. After the vote, he said council members who favored the denouncement used facts loosely to prove their point, but said he was resigned to the decision. It is what it is, he said. Now an article published on October 3 by RNS, written by Bill Lawrence, entitled, "How Helping a Family Seeking Asylum Changed Our Church Group." Before we met an Afghan family who resettled in Orange County last year, most folks at my church knew little about asylum seekers. We certainly didn't understand how complicated the asylum issue was. But over the last year, our group of 14 Christian retirees has regained the education of a lifetime. My wife, Jenny, and I had been married for 51 years and belonged to our evangelical free church since 2020. Like others there, we sought to volunteer during our retirement, especially since our four kids left home. So when our group heard about World Relief's Good Neighbor Team program, which connects community groups with refugee families, we signed up. And so last August, we met Nazir, Zabab, and their children. We've changed names for privacy. From the get-go, we discovered that the federal government gives asylum seekers little assistance and limits their ability to work. Nazir was especially eager to support his family, but couldn't find legal employment authorization for at least 6 months. With minimal funds, the couple hadn't purchased groceries in weeks, so two members of our team took Sahab and her eldest son to the store. A few days later, five of us arranged to come by with cake. Over the full meal the family insisted on feeding us, we learned their story. Nazir had assisted with evacuations during the U.S. withdrawal from Kabul and was assured his family would be evacuated too. They weren't. Afterward, the Taliban took Nazir and beat him. Other extended family members were in hiding or put to death. In early 2022, the family fled Afghanistan. They caught a series of flights to Mexico, hoping to request asylum at an American port of entry. On the journey, human traffickers force Nazir to surrender his money. Finally, the family crossed safely. A noble group of Afghan Americans, themselves children of refugees, connected the family to World Relief. Our group was shocked by this story. Nazir and Sahab opened our eyes to how dangerous and dehumanizing the asylum process could be. The family didn't only need material comforts, they needed trusted friends in this new country. Over the next 4 months, our group took the family grocery shopping, to doctor appointments and immigration hearings. As word got out, church donations poured in. But 9 months after their arrival, Nazir still hadn't received a work permit. In late November, Nazir texted me with anticipation as the day had finally arrived for the family's hearing to receive humanitarian parole, a 2-year status that provided a small amount of government assistance and would allow Nazir to work. But a few hours later, the hearing was canceled. The court had lost the schedule. Jenny and I checked on the family that afternoon. They were devastated. We encouraged them to persist, but Nazir feared deportation if they didn't receive legal status soon. A few days later, when we couldn't reach them, we drove to their apartment. It was dark. We feared the worst. Had they been deported? When Nazir finally texted, we were beyond relieved. They'd fled to another country with friendlier immigration policies. And in fact, Nazir soon received benefits and then work authorization there. I'm happy for the family, but I wish America had done more for them. Nazir risked his life for Americans only to be denied basic dignity in the U.S. We now see migrants in a new light, including their resilience in the wake of trauma and the injustices they face, like work-delayed permits. Jesus told us to welcome strangers. When we do this, we not only help others, we are changed ourselves. Our team cannot fix all the immigration challenges, but we can make a difference by helping one family. We're glad we did. We've run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payden, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.